Welcome to the Modcast, an official Polycast production brought to you by Apollotan Civilization Site. Bouter Snijders.
Kenneth Hurland.
Tony Keel.
Oscar Venzi.
Welcome to Modcast, an official Polycast production. Today is episode 3. Joining us today is Oscar Velzi.
Hey, yeah.
Kenneth Furland.
Greetings.
And Wouter Snijders.
Hello.
So, yes, we have a lot of interesting things to talk about on the show today. Like perhaps a game that looks like another game that may not be moddable. And quite a big artists section today. Yes, it will be a lot of fun. Yes. And Wouter gets to edit it.
Woohoo! Or not.
Alright, today in the news we talked about Civilization Revolution and will it ever be modded, and the future in modding in games. In the artist sketchpad, we looked at artwork from the Civ 4 community. We talked about a Simon Bolivar leaderhead, a Lech Walesa art leaderhead, Lockheed U2 flamethrower, and Avro Vulcan. A lot of art.
Both in the cartography room and in the spotlight, we talk about map scripts, continents and islands, and tectonics, respectively.
Here's what's been making news in the Civ community.
So, has anyone else seen these screenshots?
Yeah, I've seen it.
They're pretty interesting.
Haha, I laugh at your screenshots.
So, which screenshots are we talking about exactly? Maybe we should inform our listeners.
Well, the Nintendo DS version of Civilization Revolution. And I'm looking at them right now. There's a... It reminds me of, advanced Super Nintendo graphics on the DS, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the resolution is quite a bit lower, of course, but they managed to do a completely different set of artwork for those. So that there was...
And the background...
Yeah, that's the amazing part.
Looks like...
My understanding is the underlying game engine is identical.
Yeah, you can clearly see, if you look at the map screens, that's it's the same map as in Civ 4.
Yeah, they...
It's a top-down view and much lower quality textures, of course.
It looks more like Civ 4 than Civilization Revolution for the PS3 or the...
Yeah.
Or the Xbox. You look at the map screen.
You know, those textures remind me a lot of, for some reason, Civilization 3.
They look kind of like that.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Now, they're Civ 4.
Well, that makes sense, because they're Sprite. Civilization 3 was Sprite.
Yeah, just like this.
Okay, so there you go. I hear a lot of these, you know, very low resolution stuff. It's actually much harder to make these than high resolution artwork.
Yeah.
Is that true, guys?
Yeah,
because you have less space to work with and less area to add details. You almost have to make an impression of something and then zoom it out and look at it. You're just trying to get an idea across with only 10 pixels.
Yes, that pixel is his head, you know?
Yeah. But it looks like here, when you go to battle with someone, I guess the top screen shows your unit shooting at the unit you're fighting, it seems. A little action screen. That hasn't been seen in Civ since Call to Power, right, Wouter?
Yeah.
Which technically isn't Civ, but kind of is, so, you know, yeah.
That's Civ. That's sort of, yeah.
Civ-ish.
It's not Sid Meier's nothing.
Okay.
But it's definitely a Civ. I don't know how they got that off copyright-wise, but somehow they did.
I thought some people did get sued over it. I'm not sure. It was close. I think there was some wrangling over it.
I could try to explain how the situation works, but I don't know if you guys are still going to be here in 6 hours.
Oh, great.
Okay, that would be a little bit of a diversion. So,
yeah,
I knew that Wouter knew. I knew he knows something.
I want to see the three dudes with spears fighting a tank.
That would be perfect.
Well, you have a ninja spy fighting.
Yeah.
Oh, that's... You would expect ninjas to be able to beat a tank. I mean, there's nothing inappropriate about that. I remember that episode of, like, G.I. Joe, you know, like the... I think... What was the Cobra ninja guy? What was his name?
I don't know.
Shadow or... something like this. But he comes up and karate chops the tank, and the tank vibrates and it falls apart. And it was like,
nice.
Sweet.
Oh, you get great imagery on that one, too.
Yeah, they were training people. It's like, this is how you chop the tank properly. You know, now you try.
Okay. The thing is that I believe we will never be able to mod any version of Civilization Revolution. Unless it comes out on the PC.
I'd put money on that.
What we call mod... Perhaps in a future version there will be a scenario editor and you can make a scenario, but nothing more than that. There won't be any hardcore modding, completely changing the game. And a scenario editor at most. And I don't think there will be one for any version. Perhaps for Civilization Revolution 2.
Yeah, maybe. Well, you know, there's going to be no texture editing, there's going to be no graphics editing, there's going to be no underlying code editing.
No.
I don't think there's going to be any of it.
Yeah, those things are kind of hard to do if you only have 8 buttons on your controller.
but you could hex edit the execute file, you know, bit by bit, until you made it a game you wanted.
Well, that would be just making a new game.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what capabilities the DS has with interfacing with PCs, but I'm assuming very little, and that would be the only way I could see there'd be any hope of changing the underlying structure of the game, and I would also assume that the DS has storage to hold these modifications, and I don't think it has either of these.
Oh, no, you just take a magnetic needle and write directly onto the hard disk?
I don't even think there's a hard disk on the darn thing.
Well, the flash on that, you take a magnetic needle... And just hex edit the flash drive.
You've done this before, haven't you? You've edited, you've modded with an electric needle onto a flash memory. Ken only speaks from experience.
That mod didn't turn out too well.
Did it turn out into a smoking ruin of your computer?
Who said I used my computer?
Definitely, this looks like it will be fun game, but I don't think I agree with both of you. I don't think this game is going to be modded. I kind of hoped when I had first saw it, though. Kind of hoped it might be moddable.
Yeah, well, moddable console games...
That was silly when we knew it was coming out on consoles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Is any of the Civilization Revolutions going to be able to take them on? Should be our next question, but we don't have much information on them.
Unless it comes out on the PC.
Yeah, that's true. Well, yeah, Xbox 360 is a quite advanced platform from what I've been able to see, and even downloads updates for games. You know, it does have a hard drive, and it does have an internet interface.
But... Still, how are you gonna really mod on, like I said, on controller that has like 8 buttons? You can't do that. You have to do that.
It would have to be done on PC.
Yeah, the game was.
And I know for one PS3 game, one of those shooters, I think Unreal Tournament, maybe they have this system. You can mod on the PC, and then somehow they have a way to transfer that through their multiplayer system, PlayStation Network, I think, to consoles, but then you'd have to have 2 versions of the game, and of course you'd have to have a PC version. It's a really complicated, convoluted system.
Oh, so it's not in any way made clear, even put in the instruction manual or something like,
oh, no,
this
no,
is
no.
How you access this game. No, you have to have this wares, you have to have this, you know, wiring.
Yeah, this is a real complicated, weird situation. I don't think that's ever going to be a major thing. If you want a mod, you really have to do it on a PC game. And if you want to play mods, you have to buy PC games. So it's as simple as that, I think. That's not going to change anytime
soon.
Well,
give it till the next set of consoles, the next gen.
No. I think as far as...
Yeah, Tony's got a point there that consoles have co-opted a lot of the things that PCs, that only PCs did in the past, like multiplayers and over the internet and having hard drives. And modding does seem to be the last frontier that consoles don't do, that PCs still... I have exclusivity
there's
on.
A reason for that. And I mean, there's also a reason. It would be very helpful on a console to have a keyboard and to have a regular, normal IE.
Yeah, definitely.
But console makers, Microsoft and Sony, are really actively working against that. They don't want the console to turn into a PC. There are specific things they don't want to allow. Brian Reynolds talked about this quite a bit, how they wanted to make a console version of basically Rise of Nations, and Microsoft didn't want them to do a keyboard or a similar type of input device, and it made it very hard for them to make a real-time strategy game on the console.
Yeah, well, that's interesting.
So there are certain things that are just not very likely to happen. Of course, it could always change. You never know. Maybe 5-10 years from now.
Well, look at Spore. Spore, I hear, is going to come out for console. And that's the game where you basically mod to create your own creature.
Exactly. I think that is where the future of what's not even really modding, but more like user-created content, sort of in-game type mods, where you make your own creature, you make your own. But that's the sort of thing. You also have Little Big Planet on PlayStation 3, where you can also make your own worlds and your own people and all that stuff. But it's sort of an integral part of the game. It's not really... I mean, this is the gameplay, and if you open up this editor, you can do whatever you want.
You can make all this really fantastic stuff, and then you can destroy them.
And no one will ever know.
Make your own civilizations, and then destroy them.
It's like playing with Lego blocks. You build something, and then smash it.
Oh, I so love
them. I love Legos, too.
That's the perfect analogy. I mean, in Lego, you can build whatever you want as long as the blocks that you have allow it. And Spore and Little Big Planet and all of that's going to be the same. It all depends on what blocks you have.
Yeah.
And with something like Civilization on the PC, I mean, it doesn't matter what's in the game. You can make anything that you can possibly imagine with the tools that you have. You can basically make your own Lego blocks. So, yeah, that's the difference between modding on a PC and on a console, I think.
Yep.
Got news? Email news@apolitan.net or send a private message to Dan Q, Locutus, or one of the other news editors.
Artist Sketchpad, where we discuss graphics and artwork from the Civ modding community.
And we are starting with Simon Bolivar, a leaderhead made by Ekmek. A pretty good leaderhead. Not outstanding, but it's nice.
He's got a very pretty garish uniform. It's a bright red and deep navy blue with golden leaves across it. Interesting.
Yeah, the uniform is nice, but the texture is very blurry. It could use some more definition.
True, it could use high resolution,
Yeah, totally.
The mesh editing looks pretty good on it, but I can see a few parts where he's having some troubles getting the textures looking right layered over each other with the mesh on the back of his hair and on around his neck.
I think I see a little bit of that too,
yeah.
Who's this built off of again?
Yeah, good question.
Simon Bolivar.
Oh, no, the underlying art files.
If you don't know, then it means it's good.
It's made of Alexander.
Yeah. And he's got someone else's uniform, though. Maybe not. Maybe he just textured over Alexander, too.
Yeah, okay, I can kind of see it now, He had to have that collar, then, because I don't think Alexander has a collar like that. Or maybe the collar is just painted on the neck. Maybe that's
also, I don't think his neck was this long. It looks like he put this head on another body.
Yeah, I think He used Alexander, Tokugawa hairline, and Napoleon suit.
Oh, jeez. A decapitation.
Wow. Simon Bolivar? Was he, like, very entertaining revolutionary in South America?
Yeah.
Yes, tell us about him.
Oh, he did things like...
I meant the guy from South America. Tell us about him.
No. No, I know more. No, I'm kidding.
Well, it would be nice to hear an American view, a North American view on the South American stuff.
Yes, let's hear your capitalist pig dog view, and then we will have the...
he was an insurgent pig who fought our glorious capitalist forces.
And now the pinko leftist, please speak up.
Down with...
in defense.
Okay, pinko leftist, please. I don't think he's going to respond to that, Ken.
What?
Thank you for scaring away another third of our audience.
Okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being Richard Nixon and 10 being Che Guevara, how liberal is he?
Well, the world was different at that time. He would be some kind of Che Guevara, most probably. Find, again, the realist. No, well, they got their realistas, the royal forces of Spain.
Mm.
He was a pretty cool guy. He liberated lots of countries. From Panama, Colombia, Venezuela, Peru, Ecuador, half of South America from Spanish hands. The other half being liberated by San Martin.
And this was in the 19th century, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, the beginning of the 19th century. He was a pretty cool revolutionary.
Cool.
But there's a lot to say about him.
So if...
Now he's been...
So what civ should he be the leader of?
Gran Colombia, I think.
Yeah, I agree there.
It was... A save that you can do relate to him. He tried to create this country called Gran Colombia, but it didn't last long.
Yeah, well, they don't usually last long.
Yeah. Everything that starts with big, Gran Colombia is big Colombia, no? It was too big for its own sake.
Oh, yes.
Had a civil war and broke up again?
Yeah, there were internal wars and things like that, and they broke up in smaller countries.
The struggles still go on in some ways.
Yeah. Now Simón Bolívar is being talked about a lot by Hugo Chávez.
Yeah.
His ideas and the Bolivarian Revolution. Oh, there's something very important about him. Is that he's one of the few people that has a country named after him. In this case, Bolivia. Bolivia is named after Simón Bolívar, which is pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
Ah, yes, true. But George Washington has a state named after him.
and the capital.
And Amerigo Vespucci got two continents named after himself, which, like, totally owns him.
Okay. How do you say this name?
Lech Walesa.
Lech Walesa. And this guy is from which country?
Poland.
Ah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, is this the suit guy that we see here?
Yes, he's quite good.
He's brilliant.
By Bernie 14 is the creator?
A lot of American stereotypes are being proven true.
We're going to bring in the Polish jokes now? I don't think so.
Well, more the ignorant American jokes.
See, I don't get to hear many of those, but then again, I'm stuck here.
He's probably one of the more famous figures of European politics in the post-World War II era.
So what did he do?
Well, he was the leader of the Union in Poland, and he was their first... He was sort of instrumental in the fall of the communist regime over there, and the first...
I thought Reagan did that.
Reagan was probably worried about it, right?
Yeah, sure. And what's the...
No, actually a movie just came out that proved that it was actually just one of our measly House of Representative guys who took out the Soviet Union.
You sure it wasn't Rambo?
He helped a little.
Rambo,
bit.
Actually. I think it was Rambo.
Okay. We're getting much too off onto the political side. Yeah. I wanted to say that the guy, his suit looks pretty nice. His face looks a little too shiny to me. And the juncture of his neck with his head, I mean, the guy looks like he should have, like, a lot more tookie neck. And his neck looks too thin for the size of his head. But it's probably due to the difficulty in editing together the head, neck, body thing.
Well, if you go on to, you know, Google and look up this guy's image, if he's going after a few of these pictures, you can see the resemblance, very close resemblance to...
Yeah, exactly. When I first saw that image, I immediately recognized him. Wow, that's a pretty good resemblance.
Oh, okay. So the guy really does have a thin neck and, like, a really big jaw like that. It's like, that just looks weird.
Yeah, I can actually see the picture he peeled the textures off of.
Hmm. Okay.
It's the fourth on Google Images.
Yeah, that's exactly how I remember the guy as well. Yeah, it's exactly the same image. It's true, even has the same suit and everything.
Mm-hmm. But he did a good job. I think he might have took a hint off of the George Bush because he did it the same exact method, and it looks really good.
Oh, he used a face peel? It's called the face peel.
Yeah, the face peel. That's awesome.
Sweet.
Oh, but, he won a Nobel Peace Prize.
Really?
Yeah.
You know who else won a Nobel Peace Prize lately?
Your mom.
Dun 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 dun. Most requested leader.
And then Ozio, he's never... too bored or with Civ 4, because he released a Lockheed U-2. The U-2, if anyone doesn't know, was some kind of crappy spy plane that we were illegally flying over other countries, and one of them finally shot it down.
I thought it was a band.
It was also a band. I think they named the plane after the band.
Okay, yeah, okay. And... is there a way that you can, I guess, you can limit the plane to only being doing the recon mission? Because it really makes no sense for these things to actually have any strength or combat abilities. But they should have, like, ridiculously long range and be, like, have 100% evasion or something. That would be
sick. Would be cool. And have a really long range, yeah.
Well, maybe not 100%, 99% evasion.
Oh, yeah, 99%.
Well, maybe you could give it the cannot initiate attack flag, like a machine gunner.
Yeah, because all planes can recon already, so you just don't want... Just make sure you don't give it any attack missions, and it should be all right. Although, I'm not sure why you'd want to buy a unit like that.
That's like what airships do now, but, you know.
Yeah. Hence my comments. Why would you build one?
Yeah, it would have to be cheap and,
yeah, a huge range.
Like I said, high evasion and high range. That's really the only reason if you were to actually do a unit dedicated just
great
to that.
Great flavor.
Great range would be good, but...
I think this unit would make a great flavor addition to a Cold War mod.
Oh, absolutely.
Cool. Yeah.
And the next unit I have to definitely talk about is the Flamethrower by Alaskan Assassin. This unit is so cool.
Oh, this is the most
Unit is, dude, I can't wait to get my fingers on it. I've been busy as hell, but I can't.
Do not burn yourself.
Yes, don't burn yourself when you try to reskin this unit. It's hot. It shows a guy who basically looks like a World War II infantry guy, except for he's holding a DT.
Well, it's based on a paratrooper,
really?
I think. Really?
No. Yeah. Then.
Yeah.
He's holding an awesome flamethrower, all custom textured and modeled, and he sprays out, you guessed it, huge gouts of flame and incinerates the opponent. I want modders to descend upon this unit and take those animations and go to town.
Mm. I would have made the tank on his backpack a lot bigger. It looks like he's got, like, a milk jug back there. Like, it looks like he has two 2-quart milk jugs, you know? It's like, I want gallons and gallons of meat.
He needs more ammo. Is that the criticism for this unit?
Yes. And how does his death animation look? Does he, like, fall over, and then, like, the napalm tanks burst open, and his flame shoot, it tips up into the air, comes down on him, and bursting the entire pile into the... that would be so cool.
I think it shows one lying dead on the ground, so they just kind of, I've been shot. But exploding would be much better, but...
Yeah. Now, actually, in World War II, a flamethrower would have actually been a two-man weapon. There would have been one guy holding the thrower, and someone else would actually have the pack. I mean, it was, like, too hard to carry the whole darn thing yourself.
Unless you're crazy, you know, corn-fed.
And they had, like, a little tube between them, so you had to, like, stay within, like, 5 feet of each other, you know. It's kind of annoying, but...
Yeah, well, this has to be probably my favorite unit off today's list, but just because he's doing something so innovative with it. And the very last unit is Snafu Smith, and guess what? He's making another airplane! And it's called an Avro Vulcan, which is British, and I'm assuming... is this a contemporary plane, or is this a obsolete plane? It looks pretty advanced to me.
It's from World War era, in 1970s, thereabout. It's one of the three big V planes they did. I used to be an aviation buff. I don't think I can still name all
the years. They say 1953 to 1984. So apparently it was a successful franchise.
Yeah, it was pretty successful. I have a book somewhere lying around here about all these British V bombers, but
yeah, they even use it against us in the
Falklands War.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. They bombed you. Oscar's like, thanks for bombing me. Oh, man.
Yeah.
No, you can see the little windows. The little cockpit is bright blue, so...
Yes. The other two bombers were the Valiant and the Victor, but the Vulcan was the most popular one.
Well, they said they were using it for almost 30 years.
Yeah.
So what does this have as animations? This is stealth bomber animations. So remember, stealth bomber animations.
Okay.
In the cartography room, we talk about maps and simple scenarios.
We're talking about the Continents and Islands map script by Jam 3. That's a map script based on Big and Small. He made some changes to it.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, it kind of looks pretty nice.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool map script. I really like playing it with huge maps. You can do very realistic maps there with massive continents, snaggy continents for islands, separate islands, and one option I like, it's terrain clamping. What it does, it increases the clampiness, the chance of a similar terrain appearing together. So it's a little more realistic. For example, you don't have a three-tile desert, but you have a bigger one or bigger forest, bigger concentration of terrain, instead of one tile here, one tile there. That's a pretty cool option. And there are lots of more, like reduced desert, add plains, add water. It's very, very customizable.
One thing I really like from just looking at these screenshots is I'm seeing in the continents maps versions, I'm seeing in half of them really cool-looking inland seas that seem to touch out.
Yeah.
They remind me of the Mediterranean. And you don't see those kinds of inland seas much in some of the more generic map scripts, and that looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, there are a lot of combinations in this script, especially about the continent size and the island size. You have like four or five settings in them, and you can mix and match and get very crazy results.
Yeah, I did play around with that a little bit. It does have a lot of options, although I wasn't too sure that I noticed a huge difference between the standard Big and Small map script.
Mm.
Do you know what the differences are?
Well, you can set the different size for the islands. They can be a bigger.
Yeah, that's true. It has a lot of options, and you can control a little bit more. But you know, 5% more or 5% less. And personally, I'm like, is that really that huge a deal?
No, it's not more about percentages in. In the, for example, island size, you can have a small island and big as a snaky continent.
Yeah, I know. There's like 7 or 8 options for continent size, and then for island size, you can add, I think, up to 25% more water, I think. And there's another option, less desert. It's also an option.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's these small options. It's cool to have more options, but the maps that it generates generally aren't fundamentally different from the standard big and small maps, in my experience.
Well, it depends. For example, the island overlay. You can make it separate or mix in. If you mix in the massive continents with the archipelago islands,
yeah,
you get some very strange results, like the inner seas and all that kind of wacky stuff that perhaps in a big and a small or medium and a small, you don't get those kind of things or those strange shapes that you can get here.
Okay. Yeah, big and small does have the option to mix in islands and stuff like that, but I have to say, I guess I didn't generate enough maps to really see the difference there. But yeah, it's certainly interesting that it adds a lot of new options in it you can play around with and have all sorts of weird combo maps. That's certainly interesting.
Map scripts are always fun if you just want to play a nice epic game but get some interesting terrain.
Yeah.
Yep. I like to think about them. Any interesting map script that really breaks up the continuity and you really can't predict where land will be.
Yeah.
Since a standard Pangea or Terra map is reasonably predictable. And it's good to have it mixed up.
Yeah, exactly. Those are my favorite scripts as well.
It looks like Jam 3 has 9 posts. You need to post more, buddy, and come out and listen to this modcast, because we talked about you. He has 9 posts, though.
Nah, he's too busy coding.
Yeah.
Modding Spotlight, where we discuss and examine a particular mod out of the Civ 4 modding community.
Alright, and what was the other map script we have?
Tectonics?
Yeah, this is
3.15.
Yeah, explain to me how they named this Tectonics. If, you know, Civ doesn't move land masses in that time scale.
Well, we'll have to go all the way back to the beginning. 4.3 billion years ago, when the solar system was condensing out of particulates in the orbiting the sun.
And LDI Cesari created his map script.
Okay, but realistically, you guys know about plate tectonics. Anyone should know about that who's on the internet. Yeah, and you know, you have this thing called evolution, too. But, you know.
No, can't talk about that. That's controversial.
Okay, so this map script is basically, it just creates an array and then moves around a bunch of values on that using some random seeded numbers and then actually creates the map from each point in the array after the data has been crunched. You're true, you can't move things around, but you can change them as you run a map script.
That's
so what it does is it...
That's a very very coder's point of view. Maybe it would be good to translate it to English.
Yeah.
Okay. So basically, it drops down a bunch of randomly placed blobs of land on the map, tries to move them around, and when they smash together, they create a mountain range in between, which is what you get typically in real plate tectonics. Mountains run in ridges that are typically either in the middle of the continent, like the Himalayas, or on the coast, like the Appalachian Mountains, or the
Andes.
The Andes, perfect example, yes. And
you know, I'm looking at the one screenshot he included, and it seems like there's a northern continent with a small subcontinent pulled off of it, and there's even a little groove where that continent once fit together with the other one. I don't know if that was intentional.
Yes, that is.
I think that's the kind of idea of this one.
Yeah, because the steps are it creates the land masses, and then it moves them around, and then it will randomly split the land masses, and then they'll actually drift apart. So you get those things with a rift forming.
Exactly.
I do like this script.
I have written a lot of these algorithms myself. Unfortunately, I never got to do it in Civ 4, but yeah, that's basically the idea. You create sort of a model of the planet in your code, and you move, you create plates on that, like Ken says. You move these plates around, and where these plates bump into each other, depending on how they exactly do that, you can get a couple of effects. The most well-known is probably the Himalaya. If two land plates collide into each other, you get this huge mountain range, which you see in the screenshot here, sort of. But more common is if a land plate clashes into an ocean plate, then the ocean plate gets pushed down and you get a very deep trench. And on the land side, you get a huge mountain range, like the Andes and the Rockies in the U.S., So, and that's what he's tried to incorporate in this. So he basically moves plates around, and that creates these mountain ranges. And it's a pretty cool stuff. It creates really cool little maps.
And then on top of that, there's an entire climate-generating model, which I believe uses a combination of latitude, longitude, and how close the land is to the ocean to tell you whether it's going to be plains, grasslands, plains, or desert, your forests, and then also, I think, perhaps to where the rivers are going to be placed, more rivers where it's wet.
Well, you know, also with the mountain range, one side of the mountain range will be having a large dropping of moisture,
yeah,
while the opposite side will be parched terrain.
Well, this model isn't quite that sophisticated. I believe he might still have that on his to-do list, but yeah, it does look at that.
I think he's got some of that implemented.
It looks like maybe.
He has some of it, but it's very rudimentary at this point. But yeah, it does have some of that. The net effect of this in gameplay is that you get a map with normally a lot of choke points. And personally, well, maybe you like that, maybe you don't, but personally I like that. It's a lot of fun to play with.
Yeah, I like choke points.
Well, it really is. Scrambling over these choke points.
Personally, to me, it looks like the mountain are a little too dense, or it's just the fact that in Civilization 4 peaks are impassable,
yeah.
And at the rate that this map generate peaks, you know, the Andes are not impassable, you know, that for, you know, 5,000 miles, people go through them all the time. The Rocky Mountains aren't impassable. There are some passes that are easier, some that are slower, but nothing is that impassable. I mean, it's like...
Yeah, that's kind of the problem with Civ 4. I mean, that terrain is indeed completely impassable. This was originally designed for a different Civ game, for an alternative Civ game, Clash of Civilizations, and I mean, I've made it for Cult of Power 2, and their mountains aren't impassable, so that's a lot more feasible. But he has adjusted the algorithm, and there are usually in large mountain races at least several places where you can pass them, or the range is like one tile wide, so you can move across them diagonally.
Yeah.
Yeah, a mountain pass. That's what I would actually have done, is actually had another type of terrain where it's like hill, mountain that's passable, and then unpassable peak.
Yeah.
I think that's what Civilization should have had, actually, but, you know.
That would have been nice, but this is very very simple thing. It's one file, this whole mod. I mean, you can just drop it in your Civ 4 folder. It doesn't matter if it's Beyond the Sword or whatever.
You just jump it into your public maps.
Yeah, exactly. You dump it in, and you can play it whenever you want, and that's really cool without having to mod anything else, without having to worry about, is this going to affect my multiplayer?
Oh, yeah, you could load this through other mods if they have some free-range playability, like you play next door with this map script.
Yep, absolutely.
So yeah, map scripts are a lot of fun.
Mm.
Yeah, and it's a really cool map. The one downside, what some people might consider a downside, is that it's very hard to really control what type of map you get. You said this map has one large continent with a smaller continent sort of breaking off from it. You can't really say, okay, we're going to create a map with five continents, because when you start moving these plates around, you have no idea what's going to happen.
Mm.
And you can get all sorts of weird things.
But that's what I like. I like more... I don't like so much the continuous, homogenous maps.
I agree.
I like a map that throws me a... Just as long as I'm not on an 8-square island, I like curveballs.
Agreed.
I love this as well. It's really good stuff, but some people don't like that. They want, okay, I now want to play on an islands map, and I want to play on a map with six continents. That's sometimes hard to predict how things are going to work out.
Yeah.
One important thing to point out with this map script, it's not just one thing. It's basically 7 map scripts in one. You can select what type of map you want.
Yeah, there's...
The standard versions are a sort of Pangaea. Well, that's pretty predictable what that is. Lakes, which is creates sort of a lot of very large lakes and sometimes one or two small seas. Islands, which is sort of Pangaea type map. Usually, I have to say, I found it doesn't really create a lot of great islands. It's usually sort of one continent and a couple of smaller islands around it. It creates what he calls an Earth-like map, which is really usually also one or two large continents and maybe a few smaller islands around it. And he has one with 70% water, which he calls Earth-like, and one with 60%, but the 60% version is actually a lot better in my opinion. And then he has a Mediterranean map, which is basically inland sea, but it has sort of the same general shape as the Mediterranean, which is pretty cool. And you have sort of Spain-like terrain on one side. There's always land on the eastern side, so you can cross from the northern side to the map to the southern side over land on the east coast, if you will.
Huh.
And then the coolest one is Terra, which is... which, if you open that up, sort of in the world builder, you look at the mini map and you say, "Wow, that's Earth." It really looks a lot like an Earth map. You can actually see this is North America, this is South America, this is Africa, Australia. Everything is on there, even the things like Greenland and the UK and all that stuff. Except it's randomly generated, so it's always just a little bit different.
Yeah.
In South America.
Are you talking about the default Terra?
No, this is the Terra map that's inside Tectonics. It's one of the options that you can select.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, I was looking at the code, and it has a place, you know, where it puts a seed, essentially, for every one of those things.
Yeah.
And gives it the appropriate values, but then lets it generate randomly from there.
Yeah, and certain features like Greenland and Central America and all those, yeah, specific code to make sure all of that looks...
Yeah. Force passage of between water for the Mediterranean so you can access it through Gibraltar, things like that. I mean, it's very detailed.
Yep. Oh, wow.
It's very detailed, and it's very, very cool maps. It's Earth maps, but they're always slightly different, so you can still play on a random map, but you still play on Earth. That's a really cool map type. It's really awesome to see. Yeah.
It's like one of these weird Earth from an alternate reality, parallel universe sliders kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, to actually give you a realistic Civ map for once, instead of like... This circle is continent A, and this oval is continent B, and it's touching this circle as continent C.
Yeah. So, but that's actually sort of the opposite of what the standard map type is like, because standard map type is very unpredictable. You don't really know what sort of map you're going to get. But Terra, you always know exactly how many continents you're going to have. You always know there's going to be a Mediterranean, there's going to be a Gibraltar, all that stuff.
Oh,
but it's still not a fixed map. There's always still some variation.
Yeah, most especially in the resources. That's really what makes a lot of the gameplay.
Yeah, resources and terrain and that sort of stuff. So yeah, that's an interesting map type. I think some people will absolutely love that. Some people will probably absolutely hate it. I mean, I like unpredictable maps. So
yeah.
But I do think it's really cool to see how you can make these really realistic Earth maps, but they're still not quite Earth.
Yeah.
And are randomly generated. That's really cool stuff.
I really like this part at the top of the file. You look at it in Python, he's got a list of his changes. You know, version, da 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 da. So it's version 1, version 2, version 3.1. Lost while reinstalling Windows and not backing it up. It was great, though.
Oh, no.
And he keeps going, though, but he's got lots of ones after that, so he didn't quit just because he lost a version.
Yeah. I would say that this is probably the most sophisticated map script for Civ 4. I don't think I've seen a more sophisticated one. It's a really cool one. It's my favorite map script because it creates all these choke points, and I love fighting over choke points. So
I mean, it's like 1,500 lines of code. That's like, for comparison.
Yeah, for a map script, that's quite a lot.
Yeah, I mean, like, some of the main screen interfaces are, like, that large. I mean, they're like, this is a massive pile of code, you know?
Yeah. It's a really cool map script, and like I said, it's my personal favorite.
Thumbs up.
Yeah, all people should give it a try.
call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, 44121-288-7659. That's 44121-288-POLY. You can Skype us at The Polycast or email us at polycast@apolitan.net.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Modcast, our sibling show Polycast, or about Polycast in general, log on to the series' official website at polycast.apolitan.net.
Excellent. So now we have one last thing to do, and that
is to say goodbye.
And, well, hopefully to possibly make fun of one or the other, because we are rather silly.
We should sing a song. Oh, I got a call here. Crap. Hold on, guys.
Although not all of us are as handsome as Oscar.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. But Wilder is a close second.
I doubt it.
And then me and Ken are vying for the right to be the ugliest person on Mod.
Well, since he isn't here to defend himself.
Then he wins. He is the ugliest. Oh, I love cell phone calls in the middle of the recording.
Yeah, it's not a Polycast production if there's no cell phone in it at some point.
I wonder if that's Ken returning.
No. I think it was me moving the microphone.
Damn. You can't say our goodbyes unless Ken says goodbye.
Well, you could do it for him again.
Ken Furland. All we need him to do is record just him saying his own name, and that would be fine.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was gonna say, when he comes back, the first thing we should do is ask him, what's your name again?
Your real name, Ken. Not your imaginary name. Not the one on the ID you use to buy alcohol. I think we're all of age, though, so that's kind
of
lame.
Especially since most of us are not from in the U.S., so you have these ridiculous age restrictions.
Oh, yeah, when, like, I'm, like, 27, and I go in to buy alcohol, and they're like, can I see your ID? I was like, sure, I'm 17 years old, and I have a hormone deficiency. That's why I'm so fat and hairy and old-looking. Good thing he caught me, otherwise... Ooh, I would have committed a heinous crime and drank a beer.
Yeah, that would make you fat and ugly looking. No, wait. And hairy. What exactly is the downside again?
Well, we've had a great episode today. A lot of fun. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Make sure to listen to Polycast next week. Today we've been joined by Oscar Elohim Velzi.
Goodbye.
And Kenneth Impaler WRG Furland.
What? Who? What? Wait, what?
Wait, what?
Wouter Lacutus Snyders.
Bye.
And me, Tony Garrett Tsitsaka Keel. Goodbye. See you guys soon. And now we can stop recording.
No, not quite.
Wait. No, Ken, say Ken Furland.
Ken Furland?
Yay!
Cool.
Yay! It is.
Finally, we can replace the soundbite at the beginning of the show where Tony introduces himself as Ken Furland.
Oh, wait a minute, that one. Then maybe it should be... Okay, let me try it again then. Kenneth Furland.
Record date, February 8, 2007. Sound clips, copyright Civilization 4 and the Warlords and Beyond Sword expansion packs. Copyright 2008, Apolliton Civilization site at apolliton.net.
And for Chuggy, keep chugging him out. Get it? His name is Chuggy and...
Yeah, okay, we get it.
But my wife's teasing me right now, or attempting to.
from the sidelines.
Nice.